Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the Healthy Baby Boomers Network Blog Talk Radio Show. I am your host, Dr. Erica Goodstone, licensed mental health counselor, spiritual relationship healing expert, helping men and women heal their bodies and their relationships through love, author of the book Love Me, Touch Me, Heal Me, and director of HealthyBabyBoomersNetwork.com. This show is all about living your dreams, fulfilling your life purpose, and creating and sustaining love and health and total well-being for the rest of your life, no matter how old you are right now. In every episode, I speak with vibrant, exciting, and positive men and women who are proving that life can and often does get better and better as we reach our 40s, 50s, 60s and beyond. Today I have the really special privilege of speaking with Heidi Schleifer, internationally celebrated speaker and workshop leader whose powerful and captivating style inspires and empowers men and women to embrace their life and their relationships with passion and with joy. She is a licensed mental health counselor in Florida, licensed clinical psychologist in Israel, and CEO of Schleifer & Associates Relationship Builders. Married for, I think, 47 years to her beloved husband, Yumi, a former aerospace engineer and successful businessman who trained alongside Heidi in the art of constructive relationships. Together, they have taught encounter-centered couples therapy, a crystallized integration of philosophical and theoretical sources, including the philosophy of Martin Buber, who focuses on I and thou, imago therapy, who looks deeply into the relationships, appreciative inquiry, which is an organizational method, and the latest findings about relationship neurobiology. In September 2008, a documentary film was released, Heidi and Yumi, Crossing the Bridge, which tells the story of their life, their message, and their mission. So I am really delighted today to introduce you to Heidi Schleifer. Welcome, Heidi.
Well, thank you, Erica. I loved your introduction. And, you know, whenever I hear someone introduce me like this, I think, oh, I wish my mother was hearing this.
Oh, how lovely. Well, maybe she is hearing it.
I agree with you.
So, that's lovely. So why don't you begin by sharing a bit about your background, where you came from, how you connected with your husband, just some of the beginnings leading up to where you are now.
Okay. I was born in a refugee camp in 1944 in August. So very soon I'm going to have my birthday and I'm going to be 68. I'm going to have 68 years of life experience, which I'm really very, very happy about. But I'm quite inspired by my own parents in the beginning, how they survived the war, the Second World War and the Holocaust, not just as survivors, but really as people who thrived in their life. And as a young child, even though I lived really surrounded by people who had survived those atrocities, my parents had a way of imparting joy, imparting gladness, imparting song and dance, and as a result gave me, I think in my epigenetic package, a sense of real delight in every moment. And I am eternally grateful to them for that. I grew up in Belgium, and in 1965 in Belgium I met a very interesting man by the name of Yumi Schleifer, with whom I had a very interesting beginning story that made him into really the man I felt was my best friend. But when he asked me to marry him, I wasn't ready. I was 20 at the time. I had lots of visions for the future that at that point didn't include marriage. But he said, "What am I to you?" And I said, "Well, you're my best friend." And he said to me, "Well, then, as your best friend, I recommend you marry me." Well, that was an excellent recommendation, which I took, not as easily as I'm telling it to you today, in 2012, but I took the recommendation, and I am very grateful that as my best friend, he did recommend that. And we came to America, and I studied to be a psychologist. Yumi is an aerospace engineer, as you spoke in your introduction. And 20 years ago, we decided to work together. Yumi trained in Imago relationship therapy with me, and we became workshop leaders together. I trained psychotherapists, but for 20 years we then evolved our own view of how to teach couples how to connect at the deepest level. I liked when you said in your introduction about yourself that you are a spiritual, I didn't write it down. Tell me what it is, a spiritual
relationship healing expert.
Oh, that is just a phenomenal title. Thanks. And I think Yumi and I have been teaching couples really how to embrace the full spirit of their relationship and connection. And it's been a real blessing to work together. So, in a real enormous nutshell, here it is, the story.
And I have a strange question to ask you. You've been married, I think you said, 47 years, but you also made a statement that this husband is your 25th husband. How is that possible, and how many wives have
you? You know, it's so interesting, Erica, that after a while I began to understand that the real excitement about life is the willingness to transform, to reveal that which is within us that can be revealed, to constantly unfold, and to have the courage to change. And I started watching my husband as he has this courage to shift and change and transform and open to the new possibilities of life. And so I began to count the amount of transformations, and I said, "Well, now you're my 10th husband. I can see you have embraced a whole part of your spirituality that you never did before, and I'm watching you every day really growing into your spirituality. Well, you're my 10th husband." And then I watched him decide to join me and work with me. That was my 11th husband. And then to show up more in the workshops that we were doing and really take his own space and speak his mind and show himself. That was my 12th husband. And so I would begin to introduce him to people. I'm introducing to you my 12th husband, my 13th. And now he really is my 25th in this long marriage.
Well, I think there's some credit due to you in that you made it safe enough for him to gradually join you.
Yes, it's true. It's true. You know, I was going to say, as I was excitedly telling you about my 25th husband, that my husband's father lived to be 106, but vibrant and vital. He was married to his wife, my mother-in-law, 72 years. And as I say, you know, my husband is my 25th, I'm really hoping that I'll be able to go 26, 27, 28. You know, I would love for him to live a long, long life, because there is so much to embrace in this journey of being a human being in connection.
That is so beautiful, because there are so many people that feel just suffering as they age. They focus on the aches and pains and the problems, and their relationship feels stale, and they're angry. There's so much of that.
Yes, yes. To be able to focus on what is abundant, and as you know so well, you know, where you put your attention, that's where the energy goes. So if we do put our attention on what is abundant, where the blessings are, that is where the energy then goes, and that's what grows in our life.
And there really is abundance all around us.
Yes, if we pay
attention. So you've been teaching, I believe, on 4 continents. So
that was really Yumi's contribution. You know, when he joined me, his vision was that we would travel the world, and because both of us speak a lot of languages, we both speak 6 languages, he said, let's go to all the countries of the languages you and I speak jointly. And so we have taught in Israel, in Hebrew, and we've taught in Europe, in English, French, and German, and of course in the States. And so yes, we've actually traveled to 4 continents. So we've also taught in Singapore, in Malaysia, in Indonesia. You know, we've really in Africa, we've traveled, and it's been a great privilege, and it's been an enormous education to see how the elements that construct a relationship and a connection are universal. That it doesn't matter what the cultural background is with which we have been raised, the very principles that connect us are universal to human beings. It's been very touching to see that.
So I guess that leads right to asking you, what are these connectors? What are these elements that connect us?
You know, Erica, over the years, Yumi and I have begun to see that there are 3 invisible connectors. They're invisible in the sense that unless we make them conscious in our relationship, they will not connect us. And I would like to go into it because it is really the crystallization of our 47 years of marriage. The first invisible connector is the space that is between us, the actual space. Because you know that we are very aware of that space. For example, if we come into a home where there's been a terrible fight, and people come out to greet us with joy and excitement, we can sense that the relational space in their home is toxic, even though they like us and they're glad we came. We know that the space is polluted. And so human beings are very attuned to the space between people. As a matter of fact, babies, before they can talk, are incredibly attuned to their space, and they will start crying as soon as they feel tension in the space between people. Dogs also very
attuned to that. It's not only babies, it's inside the mother's womb.
Exactly.
The fetus feels those sensations.
Exactly right. Prenatally, already, they will know the space doesn't feel right. And so that relational space that is between us is really what we need to take full responsibility for in a relationship and make it safe and fertile and rich and appreciative and joyful. Now, how do we take full responsibility for the relational space? And before I move to the how, which is the second invisible connector, I just want to give credit to Martin Buber, the Jewish philosopher of the 20th century, because he is the one who really named that space. Clearly, the space has existed between people for as long as human beings have been traveling this planet. But Martin Buber said, our relationships live in the space that is between us, which is sacred. He named that space sacred space. He says it doesn't live in you, it doesn't live in me, our relationship. It doesn't even live in the dialogue that is between us, but rather in the space that we live together. And therefore, what he pointed to is our full responsibility in how we honor and respect the space. And so when we do, the space becomes rich, and we then feel free to unfold and develop and become the potential that we are. Now, how do we do it? How do we respect and honor that space? And there comes the second invisible connector, which is a bridge. Yumi and I like to use this generative metaphor of a bridge between two people, because each person is really a world, a completely different, creative, rich, multi-layered world. And to honor the space, we must learn how to cross the bridge to the world of the other, because the other really speaks another language. Yumi and I, even though we are, you know, both now Americans and outwardly we speak English, yet our world, the world called Haiti, the world called Yumi, has a very different language in it. It has a different rhythm, a different music, a different culture. And in order to know the other person, we must cross the bridge to be with them, learn their language, learn their rhythm, learn their culture. And so to honor the space when we talk to each other about important things, we ought to cross the bridge and come as a visitor, leave our own world, just bring with us a little plastic bag with a transparent one, with a passport and a visa, leave our world and actually cross the bridge and come to the world of our partner. And there, do a visit, and we'll talk some more later about how the visit works. But this invisible connector of the bridge is a wonderful one to always visualize. There is a bridge between us. It's always there, even when we feel disconnected, which is just an illusion. That bridge does exist, and we can actually cross it with curiosity, open-heartedness, a sense of deep compassion for the other, and then the space becomes very rich. Now, the third invisible connector we call the encounter, which is also based on the philosophy of Martin Buber. The encounter is that magical moment when two people feel deeply connected. Suddenly, as if out of nowhere, there is a sense of magic between us. That's the encounter. It's the encounter of the souls. And when we honor the space and we cross the bridge, we make the encounter possible. And Yumi and I are talking about something called the encounter zone, which is a realm of being where if you have done enough visits across the bridge and your space feels rich and fertile, you begin to live in the encounter zone. And people really notice that when you are in the encounter zone. As a matter of fact, just before I finish about the three invisible connectors, I want to tell you a quick story. One time Yumi and I were on our way to London, and we had just crossed the bridge to each other, me to Yumi, Yumi to me, to a very important, what we call neighborhood, a very important neighborhood in my world, a very important neighborhood in his world, and we had really experienced the magic of the encounter. And when we arrived at the counter of British Airways to go to London, the woman there looked at us and she says, "You are obviously on your honeymoon. I am upgrading you to first class."
Wow.
And it was what she was experiencing was the encounter zone. She saw that we were so into each other, she could only refer it to a honeymoon. I mean, there was nothing else she knew that is of that kind. But really what we were showing her was, here are two people who've just had a magical encounter. Of course, we accepted first class. It was great. We didn't tell her, no, we'd been married for 35 years or however long it was at the time. But we have a motto now, which is, when you cross the bridge, you will fly first class.
Oh, that's lovely.
So those are the three invisible connectors. It's the relational space, the bridge between the worlds, and the encounter of the souls.
That is just beautiful. And so many people, first the space is not very clear, and then they don't make that bridge. It's like they damage the bridge between them. Each
right.
one expects the other one to be a certain way without understanding, with judgment.
Right.
So
exactly.
Maybe you can begin by giving us an example of this, of each of these phases.
Absolutely. I'm going to tell you a story that actually, I'll tell you first a story about me and my mother that illustrates all three, because it was a time in which living it with her made it so meaningful for me. My amazing mother was truly my hero, because she, pregnant with me, walked with my father through the Alps to get to Switzerland. They escaped a concentration camp, and that story in itself is amazing. But I'm just going to tell you the piece where she arrived at the border in Switzerland, and the Swiss did not accept any more refugees, and she decided that she could not go back to the hell where she came from, and she just threw herself over the border and was taken to a hospital because she did arrive in Switzerland, that they had to take her. She was hurt. And as a result, you know, she was well taken care of in the hospital and could, you know, regain some strength. And certainly that helped that little baby she had inside, me. And then my father smuggled himself through the border. My mother and father found themselves in Switzerland, both of them in a different refugee camp, but they were both there when I was born. So my parents are true heroes to me and have been all along. And then when my mother got quite a bit older, in her 90s, she lived in Israel, and my sister and I placed her in an old age home. And yet I could not bear it. I did not like her being there. I would come to visit her, and my heart would break to see that spirited, extraordinary woman in a wheelchair, not remembering who I was. Her spirit always there, somehow. She would sing songs, but she didn't know me, and I would just be there heartbroken. And then one day I thought, wait a minute, I'm not visiting her. I'm in my own world where I am sad and angry about this and frustrated and guilty and resentful and all the feelings I was having, but I'm not with my mother. I haven't crossed the bridge. So the next visit I came, I decided I was going to leave my world where all these feelings do exist, but I am not being asked to unconsciously put them in the space between us, which I was doing before. And I decided I was just going to cross the bridge to be with her. And so I came to the home, I sat across from her, and I consciously left my world, Haiti world, and with curiosity and open-heartedness in the moment, I crossed the bridge and I landed in her world. And as I landed, I looked in her eyes, and she looked at me, and for the first time in months, she recognized me. She said in Yiddish, "Du bist mein Tochter, you are my daughter."
Aww.
And I just began to cry, and she took her hand, and as she had done so many times as I was growing up, she wiped my tears, and I knew she knew I was there. Now, she didn't recognize me every time I crossed the bridge, but every time I crossed the bridge, I knew I was with her, and she knew I was with her, and she was with me. And that was the difference. And we had an encounter. That first time, of course, I crossed the bridge, and she recognized me, and she wiped my tears, and I looked into her eyes, and we had the magic of an encounter. It wasn't as verbal every time I visited, but it was palpable. And the space between us got richer and richer, because what I was doing before I consciously crossed the bridge is I was polluting the space with my feelings unconsciously. And so what was between us was that complexity of feelings that didn't belong in the moment. What belonged in the moment was me being with her and she being with me. So this was a very powerful, palpable experience in my life of the three invisible connectors, the relational space, the bridge, and the encounter. Now, I want to give you an example with my husband. It's a very powerful example, and it's the one I like to give because it is so, it gives such a good example of how transformative it is when you embrace the three invisible connectors. About 12 years ago, my husband got two stents in one of his arteries, and the doctor asked him to rest. And we had a trip planned to South Africa, and my husband said, you know, I really want to go. And I said, I think you should rest. You know, the doctor wants you to rest. You should rest. He said, no, I think it's going to do me a lot of good to go. And instead of crossing the bridge to his world, I became a bit defiant. I said, I don't think you should. I think you ought to listen to the doctor. I don't think it's smart. Well, you can feel that our space was beginning to get polluted because he felt I was trying to control him. He says, you know, you ought to really hear me here. I really need to do this for myself. And I said, well, no. You know, we want you alive. And I... Anyway, you can see the power struggle beginning to raise its ugly head here. And suddenly I thought, wait. Don't we teach couples about a bridge? Don't we tell them to honor the space, that there could be an encounter? And so we both decided it was time to walk our talk. And so we sat across from each other, which is a part of how you cross the bridges. You sit really close to each other, and you look first deep into each other's eyes. And we looked into each other's eyes and realized that it had been 2 weeks since the stents that we hadn't taken the time, out of fear on both sides, to really just look into each other's eyes. And just doing that, looking into each other's eyes, was already just a fantastic shift. And breathing and holding hands and just being there with each other. And then we asked each other, who's going to visit who first? And I asked my husband, would you come over the bridge to me first? And he said, with pleasure. And so he crossed the bridge to my world. And as soon as I felt him landing, I began to sob. I realized that I am so afraid to lose him. I can't afford to lose him. I finally know how to love him. I finally know how to let him love me. I can't lose him. And I realized I had not entered the neighborhood of terror of losing him. And so he held me there, and I just sobbed and sobbed and sobbed, and all I could say was, don't leave me, don't die, don't you die, don't you dare die. And I just cried it out. And when I was done, I was done. You know how that is. You just sob it out, and then you're done. You've said all you need to say.
And so then, that's what helps when you are able to say all you need to say.
All you need to say. And by that, I really also don't just mean the words, but all the feelings, all the emotions that were there. And then I came over to his world, and he felt me landing. You know, there's that real sense of, okay, you're with me. And he said three sentences I have never forgotten because they changed my life. The first one was, Haiti, I am not a heart. I am a man with a heart. Wow, that was a very powerful statement because I had only thought about his heart. I hadn't thought about the man with the heart. Martin Buber talks about I and it, that sometimes we really are a subject and we honor the other person as a thou, as a subject, but sometimes we objectify the other person. We make them into an object, and that's what I had done out of fear of losing him. I had made Yumi into an object, a heart, but not a man with a heart. And I understood what he was trying to tell me. He is a complete man with a heart. So I repeated it because part of learning the language of the other is actually repeating their words. I hear you say that you're not a heart. You are a man with a heart. Tell me more. So he said the second sentence that really transformed me, and it was the following. This man with this heart wants to say yes to the question, is this a good day to die? He didn't want to be half alive and then die. He wanted to be fully alive if death comes to take him. And I realized that out of trying to protect myself out of the fear of losing him, I would rather him be half alive than fully alive. What kind of love is that? To ask your partner to be half alive rather than fully alive because you're so afraid to lose them. And so I repeated that sentence because it made all the sense in the world to me. The man with a heart that you are wants to say yes to the question, is this a good day to die? Then he gave me the third sentence that was like transformational. He says, yes. He says, the man with a heart that I am wants to say yes to the question, is this a good day to die? And therefore, I really want us to go to South Africa. Well, that made all the sense in the world to me. Of course we were going to go. Were we going to discuss how to make the trip good so that there are resting times, etc.? You know, really transform it so that it made sense for that period. Of course we were going to do that together, but we were going to go. And we actually went. We celebrated his 70th birthday there. It was the best trip we ever took because we took it consciously understanding that we are together celebrating aliveness and a capacity to say yes to life so that if death does come to embrace us and take us, it takes us fully alive. And so this would never have happened had we not decided to honor the space, because we could feel we were polluting it with our power struggle around, I want to go, no, you're not going. I want to go, no, we're not going. That power struggle, which we could have continued ad infinitum, being right, of course, on both sides, we decided instead we're going to honor the space. We sat down. We held hands. We looked into each other's eyes. We crossed the bridge on both sides. And out of that came a transformative, magnificent trip, a 70th birthday, and joy.
I have so many reactions to that. It takes such courage to face all of that. For you to face, to really hear what he's saying, to face the possibility that he could die and you would be alone. And I want to add to that, that when you really learn to love and to love yourself and to love another person, you don't have to cling to them. You
you can let them be free, even if they want to divorce you. You can love because they have the right to live their life however they need to live it.
Because their world is different than yours, and you want to honor them. You want to honor them and love. As you say, it's really to honor the world of the other for what they are. And you learn it when you cross the bridge. You come to see how, you know, when I crossed the bridge to my husband, I had not seen that I was objectifying him. I didn't see it. I did not see that I would have him live a half life. I didn't see it. He showed it to me, and it was a revelation.
Oh, but I would see this with couples so often. They restrict the partner. You can't talk to your ex-girlfriend, and you can't speak to this person, and you can't do this. And it seems it's going to help the relationship. But if the partner has a desire or a need to speak to anybody, and you stop that person, it's making them live less of a life.
Exactly. And you see, unless you have visited the neighborhood, you see, I saw in his face the pain of being objectified by the person who says, I love you. You see, I saw it. It wasn't just his words. But when he said, I'm a man with a heart, I saw on the landscape of his face, you know, this is what we teach couples, is we teach them to really know the geography of their partner's soul, that it is written on their face. And when you begin to see the muscles of the face shifting around and you see the pain, you see the hurt, you see the disappointment, you see the longing, all of that written on the landscape of the face, you cannot deny it anymore. You see what I'm trying to say here? It isn't just hearing. It is seeing also when you visit. You're a tourist, and you come to see the whole landscape. And that's what I saw when I visited. I saw him, and then how could I not say, we're going?
And when you see the other person, you can't help feeling love for them and compassion.
Yes, it grows your chesed muscle. Chesed is a Hebrew word that combines loving kindness, compassion, generosity, chesed. And that chesed muscle grows when you see the other, really see the other.
Mm. So what message would you want to give to people that are starting out in a relationship or married for a few years and feeling frustrated, like feeling like I chose the wrong person, I want to get rid of him? That reminds me that so many women that I meet have divorced someone, maybe a few ex-husbands, and they are so happy to get rid of this one and get rid of that one. What kind of advice or message would you like to give people?
Well, I'll tell you. First of all, Erica, I really want to let people know that unconsciously we choose the most incompatible human being on the face of the earth to fall in love with. So we should know already to begin with that even though in the romantic phase of a relationship we are so filled with drugs that anesthetize us and make us feel so wonderful that we don't know we have met the most incompatible human being on the face of the earth. We just feel like we found somebody who loves everything we love. Oh, you like red? I do too. It's my favorite color. Oh, you like broccoli? I do too. You know.
Well, I would like to say that I certainly did that. I got married at 40 and married a person so completely opposite. But because I wasn't 20 and I had been through a lot of relationships, I was willing to do whatever it takes to stay there.
But you did see this is an opposite person. And that unconsciously we do find that incompatible person, because once the romantic phase is over, we can do the work of a relationship, which is to help each other complete each other, meaning that where I'm connected, my partner is disconnected. Where my partner is connected, I am disconnected, but together we feel whole. However, we can also help each other become whole, reclaim the parts of ourselves that are in the other that have been disconnected in us. And so we do find this incompatible person with whom we will naturally have a power struggle. It's impossible not to. And so we can rejoice in the power struggle. I remember our younger son, when he fell in love with a woman who now is his wife and the mother of their two children, he said to her, listen, this is the romantic phase right now. Let's just suck the marrow out of it because it's going to end. You and I are going to have a power struggle, and then we can start the work of our relationship. So in a sense, I'm giving that kind of advice to all couples, is enjoy the romantic phase. It's a delicious time of your relationship. It isn't the purpose of your relationship. Nature doesn't intend us to be happy. Nature intends us to be whole. So nature doesn't want you to stick around in that land of euphoria. It gives it to you for a while because that's a precious, precious invitation to the journey. However, the journey is about wholeness. And once the power struggle begins, you know you're now in the phase of the relationship where you can begin to grow and heal. That's the time to embrace the three invisible connectors, to begin to know how to say we're going to make a safe space between us. We're going to cross the bridge to each other, and we will encounter each other more and more till we live in the encounter zone. So the advice is embrace the power struggle. It is the turning point to begin the real work for which you have chosen each other, two such incompatible human beings.
And that is not the message that most people are giving out, receiving, you know, in the media, in the coaching professions. It's all about find the perfect person and you're
right.
Sunset. And you said something before that was really powerful, that a relationship is similar to being in the Olympics.
Yes. You know, I've been watching, Yumi and I have been watching the Olympics and realizing that it is an Olympic sport. A relationship is an Olympic sport for which you prepare yourself on a daily basis. You practice on a daily basis. You re-practice. You watch videos. You know, I saw that the Olympic champions are always watching their game and then they improve on it. And it is not a bad idea to videotape yourself and then look again and say, wait a minute, this is the place where we can rewind and replay, because our chesed muscle needs to grow right here. So it is an Olympic sport, and it is, you can get a gold medal in it. I call it relational maturity. It's a kind of maturity that we don't talk about. We talk about emotional maturity, but relational maturity is being mature inside of the relationship. And as you grow your muscles, your relational muscles, you become relationally mature. That's when you get the gold medal, and then they play the anthem of your country. You stand there as a couple, and you go, okay, we've got relational maturity. We've got those muscles in place because we've worked on them on a daily basis.
And for a long time.
And for a long time, indeed. And
my
God, I'm noticing, Erica, and this is something
of relationships.
Say it again. I'm sorry.
Doctoral dissertation was about love relationships, and I wanted to talk about romantic relationships, and my advisor made it be about mature love relationships.
Right.
So funny.
Exactly. But, you know, I was going to tell you that I have a sense that the next generation, I don't know, I'm looking at our sons. We have two sons, both married to wonderful women who, you know, incompatible, truly, both of them. and profoundly in connection. And I'm noticing that they are more mature at the onset than my husband and I were as a young couple. And I'm wondering if the next generation, although I don't know, because some of them are living with a lot of screens instead of people and lots of little letters that they push on. I don't know. But I'm noticing in terms of our family that the next generation has more consciousness than we had at their age. And I'm very proud of them for that.
So we're going to have to end now. So can you give some kind of link, some way that the listeners can get in touch with you?
Absolutely, Erica. First of all, they can find us on the web at HedyYumi.com. That's our website. And on Facebook at facebook.com/HedyYumi, HedyYumi. And then there is also on the YouTube channel a lot of relational videos that they can see. It's at youtube.com/HedyYumi, HedyYumi. Now, you know we're going to have a workshop for couples September 21st, 23rd, here in Miami, Florida. So that's going to be a very special workshop that Yumi and I will lead together. And then I am actually going to have a training. In February, I'm doing one of the introductory trainings to what I call encounter-centered couple therapy. It's going to be February 8 to 10, 2013. Believe it or not, it's going to be the new year. And as you said, there is a DVD, a documentary about our life and work. But also, I don't know if you know that I've made a new DVD, which is a train the trainer box called Encounter Centered Couples Therapy. So that's a new DVD that shows my work during 2 days with one couple.
Well, thank you so much, Heidi. It has just been delightful speaking with you.
You know, the time has flown so fast that I don't even realize how long it's been. It feels like a moment, but that's what the encounter is all about, right? It's eternal.
It sure is.
Thank you so much,
Erica. I am your host,
Dr.
Erica Goodstone, saying goodbye for now. And please visit my website at healthybabyboomersnetwork.com. On our next show, I will be interviewing Dr. Virginia Crist about how to keep love alive at any age.